And now joining us via phone from Ann Arbor, Michigan, is Phil Bock, CEO of Exponential ETFs. They're behind the reverse cap weighted U.S. large cap ETF, which has one of the better ticker symbols out there, reverse, RVRS. Phil, always great having you on the show.
Great to be back on. Thank you.
So, Phil, I tried to get creative here, which admittedly isn't always my strong suit, but I'm trying to keep things fresh on ETF Prime. So given that you offer this reverse cap weighted ETF, I thought it might be fun to try and reverse my usual interview format. Instead of having you spotlight this ETF, I want to play devil's advocate and bring up some common objections, things I've heard, things I know you've heard on why not to use this ETF. And I thought you'd be the perfect person for this because I know you're confident in this product. You're not worried about addressing these questions. First, just so everyone's on the same page, though, I'll let you provide some basics here. So if you would, just give us a quick overview as to what reverse does, and then I'll start peppering you with my questions.
All right, let's do it. Reverse is very simple. It's the S&P 500 constituents, but rather than being weighted largest to smallest by the market cap, we weight the 500 stocks by the reciprocal of the market cap, one over the market cap. And what we get is a portfolio that is a U.S. large cap fund. You know, the weighted average market cap is just under $20 billion. But we're tilted towards the companies that, you know, we think by definition, the smaller companies have a better risk return profile. And it also allows us to build in a mean reversion mechanism where we buy low and sell high as a course of business, as a course of rebounds, as part of the process of managing the fund.
All right, Phil. So some would say just go buy a plain vanilla mid-cap ETF. That if you look at the performance and risk profile of reverse, it's very similar to that of a mid-cap stock ETF, which theoretically you could get cheaper. So what would be your response to that?
Yeah, and that's a, you know, that's a fair objection. I would say what you'd want to do is get a reverse cap weighted mid-cap fund. And, you know, what mid-cap does is mid-cap captures a size premium relative to large cap, just like reverse does. Now, the weighted average market cap in most mid-cap funds is significantly lower than reverse. And, you know, you get stocks that are market cap weighted, so you're tilted towards the higher end of wherever they cut off the mid-cap range. And you get that size premium a little more so than you do with reverse. But now you've got a basket of stocks that have less analyst coverage, less quality, and they're still market cap weighted, which means that every quarterly rebalance, you're still taking money out of the losers and putting it into the winners. You're constantly buying high. So what you lose, if you took a basket of stocks that matched a weighted average market cap of reverse, and it was diversified enough so you can capture that exact size premium that we're exploiting, what you would lose is that mean reversion mechanism. So what that means is before the global financial crisis, when the financial sector was dominating the S&P, reverse was unwinding that position, was profit taking at every rebound and whacking it back, and was underweight before the global financial crisis, severely underweight financials. You look at it today and you say, wow, this fund looks like it's an anti-FANG fund or it's an anti-technology fund. And it is. And if we see an unwinding of that technology trade in the coming years, we're going to be very good beneficiaries of that. You lose that by being in a market cap weighted mid cap fund.
Okay, so let me flip that around. When people talk about the shortcomings of market cap weighting, as you mentioned, you often hear about the tech bubble and financial crisis, right? The S&P 500 was overloaded on tech stocks in 2000 and financials in 2008. Investors were exposed to outsized risk because of that. On the other hand, there is a stat out there that like 4% of stocks have contributed to all of the returns in the U.S. stock market since 1926. So the point being that it's usually the biggest winners that lead to the bulk of the returns in the market. So wouldn't reverse cap weighting prevent that from happening?
No, you want to get them while they're cheap. You want to buy them when they come into the S&P at a lower valuation. That's where you want to buy them, not when they run up and they're high. If you think about it, if you look at where Netflix came into the S&P, it came in as the 300th company at the time that it entered the S&P. So we would have been slightly overweight in reverse cap weight. Now you look at it at the valuation today, you say, you know, this company, you know, phenomenal growth story. Everyone loves Netflix and we love it in our ACSI fund because it's got great customer satisfaction, a lot of customer loyalty. But is it overvalued? A lot of people think it is. So if you're in a market cap weighted fund and that is your view, you're going to be overweight in a market cap weighted versus underweight today. And you look at the contribution of those FANG names to the S&P 500 performance, they have in fact dominated. You're 100% right. But that was last cycle. And unless you have a time machine to go along with your market cap weighted fund, I don't know how that looks going forward.
Okay, what about an equal weight ETF? Oftentimes when I see a write-up or piece on reverse, you'll see equal weight, you know, included in that as well. Why not use equal weight instead?
I love equal weight, and I think equal weight is significantly better than market cap weighted over the long term. Equal weight is a half measure. If you think about a seesaw or you think about a scale, right, you've got two ends. You've got market cap weight. And once you've accepted that equal weight, because of the rebalance mechanism, that equal weight is going to, over the long term, like it has done over the last 30 years, is going to outperform the market cap weighted, why would you stop at that half measure? You've already decided that these bottom end stocks in the S&P 500 that's tilting away from the top end towards the middle, towards the bottom, that there is alpha to be had there. We'll just turn the dial a little further to get the stock that you actually want. They're actually driving that alpha over the long term. And instead of at every quarterly rebalance whacking all the stocks that went up back to flat and taking that profit, which is how equal weight derives most of its alpha, more so than the size tilt, well, why not go a step further? And why not be over allocated in those companies that have the most room to run, that have the most room to catch up in the S&P, and the most long-term growth in front of them?
Phil, not directly related to the investment approach of reverse, but two areas I know you have to continually overcome objections on are the assets and trading volume in reverse. So some investors will say, hey, there's not enough assets in the ETF. I need to see 100 million or whatever. And then others might say, well, this ETF only trades, you know, 6,500 shares a day. It's not liquid. How do you address both of those?
Look, I mean, they're all fair questions. I love the first set of questions that we have. I love geeking out and talking about the strategy and why we think it makes sense. You know, we start getting into a lot of conversations about what are our economics, what is our size, what's our funding, what's the liquidity of the fund. And a lot of people are just, you know, there seems to be this shift that happens where in every sector that you deal with, when you look at these up-and-coming startup companies that bring great ideas to market, everyone is very excited to work with them. But somehow the narrative has been stolen in the financial services industry where people just want to work with the largest funds and the largest issuers who are not doing exciting things by and large. And, you know, we like to attack that head on. We think that there is edge to be had by discovering a great new fund that your competitors aren't necessarily using. And if you're able to source liquidity better than your competitors by either working through your, you know, the capital markets desk at the issuer that you're working with. We have a capital markets desk here. By working with the trading desk at the broker dealer, the custody firm that you clear through, you can access that liquidity. And, you know, maybe your competitors are scared off by a fund because of the asset size. That gives you edge. That's my main point on it. But the other thing is that, you know, the measures of liquidity in a fund, and people talk about, well, the underlying components are very liquid and therefore enough liquidity can be made in the fund. And that's 100% true if you're trading in size, but you still need to work through a market participant, typically an AP, in order to get that liquidity through the creation redemption mechanism. The secondary market liquidity, the bids and spreads, what you get if you're just trading, let's say you're just putting in market orders, which you should never do, but let's say you're putting in market orders on the exchange, well, that should be measured by spreads and depth. And we're very proud. We've put a lot of work into managing the secondary market and the quality of markets of our funds. And when people just say, oh, the AUM is low, therefore it's not liquid, you know, it really takes all the work that we've done in managing the liquidity of the fund, and it really discounts it. So, you know, that is something that we've certainly taken issue with, and we really hope there's more awareness in the market about how to truly measure liquidity.
All right, before we move on, any other common objections to reverse that you hear? I think we hit on all the main ones that I had.
I think people say it's too wonderful, mate. It's just too good, and they can't wait to get in.
Our guest is Phil Bock, CEO of Exponential ETFs. All right, Phil, with the remaining time we have, I want to hit you with our rapid-fire ETF Q&A. I have some questions that I think you'll like on a much more friendly note, and I want to start with ETF intellectual property. So I know you have some concerns regarding the fact that larger ETF providers can simply rip off the best ideas from smaller providers. I share those concerns. Do you have a solution here? I mean, is there anything that can be done?
In the product design, there are certain things that could be done to protect intellectual property. So, you know, we're out. We came up with the concept of reverse. We've done a tremendous amount of research and, you know, write about it and try to popularize the idea. Anybody can reverse weight any index. And, you know, there's nothing proprietary about just saying, hey, we're taking the reciprocal of the market cap. But we do have an exclusive license with S&P. So we have some protection there. And we think that that is the best index, not only because, you know, S&P is, you know, so well regarded and well used, but also because there's $9 trillion benchmark to that index, which, you know, may or may not provide some artificial support to some of the bottom names that we benefit from. But, you know, in the product design, our customer satisfaction fund, we use a proprietary database that is far superior to anything else out there in that space. They have a patented econometric model, several white papers, you know, it's based on the work of Professor Klaus Fornell, who's one of the most cited academics in the entire country. So, you know, there are things that you can do in the product design to help protect yourself, and the onus should be on the product developer to, you know, to put in those protections. We don't hide from that. You know, we think that's the case, and if we do something that's easy replicable, that's a flaw in our design patterns. But what I think, you know, there should be some shame in somebody who either takes a concept from one issuer and asks another issuer to do it, which we've seen happen, or in a fund company that has, you know, armies of researchers and product developers and, you know, all the resources in the world, that they're not able to come up to with their own ideas, that they have to go and borrow what other people have come up with. There should be some shame in that.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the thing that I struggle with just as an entrepreneur myself. You know, I know the blood, sweat, and tears that goes into starting up a business. If you come up with a great idea, and it's got to be disheartening to see somebody, you know, who's larger and more established, just be able to pick off those best ideas. And certainly to what you were saying earlier in the investment space, you know, look, you can't really, you know, everybody wants to copy Warren Buffett, right? You can't really, you know, trademark that per se or put a patent on it. So I get it. I don't know that there's an easy solution here, but it is something frustrating. On a lighter note, I know you made the comparison between the ETF industry and the beer industry. So the question that I have is, if Exponential ETFs was a craft beer, what would it be?
Bell's here in Michigan, or I might even go Founders, you know, with the all-day IPA. But, you know, we are Detroit-based. I know you introduced me in Ann Arbor. We just recently moved to Detroit, and Michigan has some of the best brewers in the entire country here. So I'd have to go with the hometown, Bell's or Founders.
Okay, and on that note, I've seen you tweet quite a bit about Detroit wineries. So do you prefer wine or beer?
Well, I prefer beer, unfortunately. That might get me in a little bit of trouble. I drink beer, I drink whiskey, and I drink a little bit of mezcal. But Detroit Vineyard is a wonderful winery that we've opened up in partnership with Professor Fornell and Blake Nacki over there. And, you know, they're a sister company of ours. We have the same backing and funding. And if anyone's in Detroit, give me a call. We'll give you a tour. It's a wonderful place.
All right, so I'll ask you the same question. If Exponential ETFs was a wine, what would it be?
Oh, no. I'm just not that knowledgeable on the wines, but I'll go with Detroit Vineyards because that's a cop-out, but it's easy.
All right, I don't want to get you in trouble here. Should I ask you what beer, wine, iShares, or Vanguard would be, or will that get you in too much trouble?
That might get me in too much trouble, but I will say that, you know, Budweiser and Coors have very good distribution, are very cheap, and are very bland.
All right, fair enough. Phil, since you're not a fan of market cap weighting, if you look at the FANG stocks right now, are there any you just absolutely despise, or is it all of them? And if so, why?
You know, I think Amazon may or may not be overvalued here, but it's an incredible company. Apple, we think there are some challenges for them penetrating the emerging markets, but, you know, they have a very strong customer base here in the U.S., and they've built, you know, really strong ecosystem. You look at Facebook, and you just wonder how it has the valuation it has. I mean, this is a company that people specifically do not like. They do not like going on there. Some people go on there anyways, have it, but they're declining. They make all their money. Over 96% of their revenue comes from ads. Nobody looks at these ads. People avoid these ads. Our eyes are trained as we scroll through the web to ignore these advertisements. They've got massive antitrust regulation risk. They've got massive regulatory risks on different fronts. They're not able to penetrate the emerging markets that they're supposed to. And it's just amazing to me that the valuation on Facebook right now is higher than the GDP of Sweden, I mean, just to sell some ads online, I just don't see it. I don't understand it. And, I personally, I don't make a lot of single stock calls, but in this case, I'm extremely bearish on Facebook.
All right. On the note of single stocks, out of all the holdings in reverse, do you have a favorite stock? And to be very clear, this is not an investment recommendation. Just a company you really appreciate what they're doing right now.
Yeah, well, so, you know, reverse is very process-driven. It's a strategy that speaks to some quants, at least those who aren't, too drawn into the allure of opaqueness, those that can accept the simplicity of it. It's a quantitative strategy, and we don't care what stocks are in it. It's the reciprocal, the market cap that's in the S&P 500, that's it. But ACSI, our other fund, is much more of a stock pickers type of fund where we say, based on not my intuition or not what, the firmness of the CEO's handshake, based on a large sample set of normalized data of their customers, not people that have opinions, but people that have actually transacted with that company, what are those people saying? Are they going to be back? Is there recurring revenue? Is there, and when you look at it, we picked up on Shake Shack super early. We picked up on Facebook, speaking of Facebook, super early, had very high customer satisfaction, and then it turned negative about 2 years ago and, came out of our portfolio as such, and a lot of their problems have arisen since then. So, that's the area where I really tend to find favorites and not.
All right, Phil, last question. What excites you most about the future of the ETF industry?
I think right now we're seeing in some levels, and we've talked about this just now, but in some levels there are some, gates that are being put up around the innovators and the startup type companies, and it's a little bit dangerous, but in other areas you see it continuing to bubble up in different ways. It's like a game of whack-a-mole, the big guys try to keep the little guys down and the little guys keep finding other ways to pop up. And, when you go online, you go on Twitter. I love Twitter. Twitter to me is like being in New York. You go to New York, there's garbage everywhere. It smells like piss. You don't know if you're going to get pushed onto the subway tracks, but it's New York. You're running around. You're doing meetings. There's business opportunities. There's places to eat. It's just a fun energy. To me, that's what Twitter is. And you go on Twitter and start scrolling through, and it does smell like piss, and there are some very rude people, and I can get drawn into it too. I'm not immune. But you also see, an exchange of ideas that you've never seen anywhere else. You see, people that are doing things, people that are seeking best practices, best knowledge, and it really does, generate a lot of excitement for the future of the industry.
Phil, very well said. Love the analogy. Fun chat as always. Love having you on the show. Thanks for joining us this week.
Thanks, Nick.
That was Phil Bock, CEO of Exponential ETFs. And you can learn more about Reverse along with their other ETFs by visiting exponentialetfs.com.